Hello, welcome to Slovak Ancestry, the podcast about genealogy, family history and heritage. We are going to talk here with the people from all around the world with the connection to Slovakia and their interesting search for their ancestors. The more I am learning about the people that left, the more I think we should be aware of our roots and where we came from. My name is Michal Rázus and this podcast is created with the support of podcast industry. I am glad to welcome here today Maja Iriondo, who is currently living in Hawaii, but part of her roots are in Žarnovica, Slovakia. We are going to travel half of the world on an exciting and dramatic story of her grandparents. Hello, Maja. Yes. It's great to talk to you after a while. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. It's been an unusual year.
When you contacted me a couple of years ago, you shared with me a really unbelievable story of your grandfather and your grandparents, which could be really easily a Hollywood blockbuster. Your grandfather came from Slovakia, right? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so what do you know about him before you contacted me?
Yeah, very little. At the point I was contacting you, I suspected he came from a village or a town called Žarnovica. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes. Žarnovica, Slovakia.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. In Slovakia. I grew up knowing he was from Czechoslovakia then. And he emigrated to Bolivia around the time of the war. He married there to my grandmother, and then he went back to Europe. And what happened in Europe, everything became confusing and even more confusing in the retelling as time went on. So the one certain fact I had was that he had a younger brother who had been pilot or had been associated to the Royal Air Force in the Czech squadron in England. So with that one certain information, I had started making inquiries, and his younger brother had died and during the war. And because they had cemetery records in the UK, I could find him, and they listed his place of birth as Žarnovica. And I was trying to contact desperately the archives in Žarnovica to confirm if that person with that name and last name was my great uncle, and if I could find any thread that would help me by following it find my maternal family, those who were still alive and their descendants, of course. So I was grasping at straws, and when I saw a little ad online, there was some World War II veterans forum, and you had posted a little ad saying that you did translations, document translations and genealogical research. And to me, that was, you were my fairy godmother. I said, someone who can help me. And please.
Yes.
Talk to the archive people.
I have to admit that I was really shocked in a good way when you sent me the request, because in the email, I remember it like it was yesterday, you were writing that, help me to trace my grandfather who disappeared mysteriously short after World War II. And that was exactly something I was immediately attracted, and I wanted to learn more and to help you. So yeah, I think then we were able to find the birth records, right, in Žarnovica.
Yes, it just, not only you spoke the language, you could talk to the old lady. That was perfect.
And that was something mysterious, because maybe we can add that your grandfather was of Jewish origin. And unfortunately, after the World War II, most of his family was gone, or actually there was nobody left that we had a chance to ask. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. The problem I had encountered, I knew who had died, but I didn't know who had lived. So we had to put our heads together. And in the end, you, at my request, published a little ad in the newspaper, the local bulletin, I think. It was not even a newspaper. It came out every 2 weeks or something like that.
Exactly. I remember it really well, because this is what we did. We posted an advertisement Help Us to Find the Grandfather. This was the title of it. And nothing was happening like 2 or 3 months, I believe. And then suddenly, out of blue, I got a phone call from the lady living in Żarnowica. And she was telling me, you know what? I am 70 years old and I was reading it to my 95 years old blind mom. And she said, yes, I remember the people. I know where they lived. And this was like the spark that helped us to light the fire. And then the thing started to move.
Yes, it was incredible. Also, there was another completely unrelated thread I was following. You see, I'm from Argentina. I was born and raised in Argentina, far away, during a time where, without internet and still during the Cold War and everything, it was very hard to find information on Czechoslovakia. And I didn't know exactly where in Czechoslovakia my mother's family came from. My mother never met her father. She was born after my grandparents had drifted. We don't know what happened. It's part of a soap opera because whomever could have told us what exactly happened is no longer here to tell us. So we can only guess and look at travel records and visas and things like that. But I needed to know more about the history of the countries I was looking into. And for most of my early life, there was not much material to actually read or study, not in provincial Argentina. Everything it was on the other side of the Iron Curtain was not available. You had references to, gross national products and language and things like that. Nothing that would tell you who lived where. Even finding maps was complicated.
I would like to ask, because you were telling me that your grandmother was living Czechoslovakia within very dramatic circumstances. So can you describe her route? Because I think you mentioned that it was very short after the war and the communists were coming. I remember this story and maybe you can tell more about it.
Okay, this is the story I carried with me. My grandmother died very young, when I was also very young. And she was the one who used to tell me these things. My mother wouldn't speak of it at all. She wouldn't want me to. For her, it was something buried and forgotten, and she didn't want to hear about the family. Who knows? There still is something that for her is not easy to open and to look into. My grandmother was Bolivian. So this is a country on the other side of the world with a completely different situation. And so she was born in La Paz, in the city that is not the capital, but functions as a capital in Bolivia. In 1921, she was the daughter of a well-to-do family. They had a good situation. They were educated. They had means. The daughters played the piano. They did sports. The little problem there was that she was the eldest of 6 siblings. She was not very conventional and she wanted to go to the university. So there was some drama early on as she headed off to the local university and ended up getting a degree in architecture and engineering. And in those times, good girls of good families didn't do that. For all the accounts, she was the first to do so in Bolivia. And she, of course, broke a lot of conventions and was on the wrong side of her mother, who was a very, very tyrannical figure, according to all the stories. And she got herself a boyfriend whom nobody really knew where he came from, one of those Europeans that showed up because of the war and brought all these interesting situations with the family. Lots of ruffled feathers. I grew up hearing a little bit about that from the Bolivian family. But the fact is, they met in Bolivia. She was working, which was terribly unusual for a construction company. And we think that because that company was owned by one of the rich benefactors that were sponsoring migration and refugees from Europe to places like Bolivia, they may have connected there. My grandfather and a bunch of his cousins and friends left Europe in the nick of time in 1938. I learned that later. And they made it to Bolivia. I think they arrived in Bolivia the day of Kristallnacht. So it was a very dramatic time for everybody. And I didn't know much about him. Things that you heard from the Bolivian side of the family, oh, he was charming, he spoke many languages, he had these beautiful blue eyes, and which is rare in Bolivia. And we just didn't know much about him. Some people thought, oh, he was an engineer. No, he was a lawyer. And so you didn't even know what he actually did for a living. And but he was in Bolivia, and he met my grandmother, and they married. And with some interesting reactions on my grandmother's family side. And very briefly after that, he had received news that his baby brother, Andre, had died in combat, or he was on a plane and he was hit and he didn't survive. And that he couldn't live with that, and he decided to go back to Europe. This is already almost at the end of the war. It was 44. And so in 1944, they were very newly married. My grandmother went to the United States she had finished with honors her degree in architecture, and she had earned herself a scholarship to Pennsylvania. So she had full scholarship for a year to study architecture and urban planning in Pennsylvania State University. And off she went. This is, again, 1944, and he went to Europe. We assume that they left Bolivia together. It was a long trip, because from Bolivia, you either had to take a train all the way to Buenos Aires and then take a ship and travel by ship to Europe or to North America. Or otherwise, again, you needed a train and you had to go to either the Chilean coast or Lima in Peru to take another ship and then go around the Panama Canal and make it to New York and make it to London, where people usually entered. London was the one port that people could go to, or Manchester. And I don't know exactly how they traveled, but they left for different destinations. And very shortly after the war was declared over, my grandmother hopped on a ship and went to Europe to meet with my grandfather. From all accounts, the story I heard growing up, and then the same story that I heard from the relatives, was that they went to live in Prague, that Prague was newly liberated, that my grandfather, his name was Evzen, we called it Eugene because that's the Anglicization, yes. Eugenio in Bolivia. That's another interesting thing. You have all these different versions of the same name of the same person. And looking through documents has been interesting, because exactly. You don't know who. Yeah. He and his sister and their significant others, my grandmother, my aunt's husband, and their my great-grandmother, and I think my great-grandfather, they all settled in Prague for a few months. It was a short period of time before, in 46, something happened. My uncle, his name was Josef Och, was coming back from a meeting, and he didn't make it to the train station. Apparently, The story goes that there was a lot of unrest and interesting situations, people disappearing in the street if they belonged to the wrong side of the political spectrum. All these stories were, again, they were told to me by one person and discredited by the next person I spoke to. You know, people would say, no, it was lovely in Prague after the war. No, the communists will never do that. Or it's very hard to know what exactly happened. But we know that Josef Och, who had been in exile, living in the UK and had been working for the government in exile, probably was on the wrong side of some people, and he was kidnapped and never seen again in 1946. His wife, my aunt Piroshka, she had already two children, another on the way, and the only other person there who could look for him was my grandfather, who they were best friends, and my grandfather went on to all the offices and agencies. He presented an habeas corpus. He turned out to be a lawyer. He was a lawyer. He had studied law in Bratislava before the war. And when they saw the signs on the wall, all the anti-Semitism building and all the unrest, he and some of his friends started learning languages, a bit of English. They were fluent in German, and I think French was always something that they had to know because that's what you did. You studied French. But he went out of his way and started screaming at everybody to learn English and Spanish. And he started looking into visas to go abroad, to go to the Americas. Him and Josef Och and a whole group of others, they were part of the Social Democrat Party or movement, and they had connections that helped them find those visas and helped them in my grandfather twice to get out of Europe. When they were back in Prague, being a social democrat or being associated with the Masaryk government in some ways was a very sketchy proposition for my great uncle Josef Och, and he probably that's what happened. He was disappeared and never found again. My grandfather, on the other hand, had a couple of strikes. He wasn't only a social democrat, but he had been fighting with the Allies, and apparently being part of the Allies didn't make you very welcome presence in the 46-47 period in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, that's true, because you know the times after the World War II were very chaotic, very uncertain. Just as you said, you know, if you were on the other side or on the wrong side, it was all melting, and you know the world was getting ready for the new order after the war. So exactly, you are completely right.
Yes, well, but to get it right, I had to. I was in this pendulum of uncertainty for years. Also, imagine I grew up in Latin America. There's nothing that is going to tell us that the communists are bad people, because those who are telling us that the communists are bad people are our worst enemies, or the military dictators, the squadrons that show up in the middle of the night to disappear people for being professors or activists. So if you grow up in a culture like that and someone says, well, probably, you know, there was something with, you know, the Communist Party, and you're 15 and living on the other side of the world where the situation is completely the opposite, you would say, no, you know, this is not just, you know, my puzzle doesn't fit. So it took me first the lack of knowledge, the lack of resources I had back in the day. And then, just that kind of situation was so unexpected for someone growing up during the Cold War on the other side. I don't want to sound terribly naive, but it was a big paradigm shift for me, and in my 20s. to realize that something was really wrong. Yeah.
So then your grandfather kind of disappeared, and you do not know, or you didn't know what happened to him, right? You know, in these crazy times just after the war. Is this what happened?
Yes, yes. So the story that arrived to me was that he disappeared in the middle of this, just the same way that my uncle had disappeared. The extra drama for the story was that my grandmother knew a smattering of Czech. At that point, she had been trying to learn. And this probably was around, May, April of 1946. It's hard to, I'm guessing. She was, by this time, she was pregnant. There was no uncle, there were no husbands in the house. There were two elderly people. One of them, my great-grandmother, who had been an inmate in Berger-Belsen and recently liberated. And then there were a couple of children and two pregnant women. It was hard to imagine. They didn't know what to do, and my grandmother, her name was Lilia, she said, well, I have a degree, I can work, I'm going to go. Apparently there were agencies where people could go and ask for employment, and this is the story I was told, that she went to one of these offices to ask for employment. And they asked her what she could do, and then why was she asking for employment? And she said, well, my brother-in-law is missing, my husband too. I have a kid in the way, and we're taking care of a whole family. And when they asked about her husband, the person at that office that she was speaking to told her that he didn't believe she had the right to work, because my grandfather, her husband, had been fighting with the Allies, and that they were not that he was persona non grata for having been fighting with the Allies, so with the Czech army stationed in Edinburgh, I think, and because she was the wife of someone who was not a desirable person. She was also undesirable and a foreigner, so she didn't have the right to work. And for that reason, she also didn't have the right to get the rations that she was getting. So he demanded of my grandmother to give him back her ration card. She got angry. She called him names in all the languages she could remember. and then she, according to, and this is what she told my aunt, and then she told me, and so we only have her word for this, but apparently, and she used to have a temper. She threw at this guy the papers that were on the table, called him names, and slammed the door on her way out. But it was not something that was done. And when she, still very angry, arrived at the house and told Petey what had happened, Petey almost fainted and told her, this is crazy. You've done something very stupid. You need to get out of here before they come for you. And my grandmother poo-pooed it, but she went out, and she didn't know what exactly she was going to do. So she went to what was then the temporary consulate of the United States, because she was Bolivian, but she had been a graduate student in the US prior to going to Europe. She still had her visas and her paperwork. So she assumed she could ask to, you know, ways to go back via the United States. And when she arrived, she said there was this big room full of people. There were hundreds. It was a sea of people, everybody waiting in turn to ask for a visa. And she sat and waiting for her turn. And she sat for hours. That then she heard someone call her name. To point out the situation, you have to imagine, well, this is Prague after the war. Again, a room crowded with people. But most of these people look European, and my grandmother is a very native-looking Bolivian. So straight black hair, almond, dark eyes, olive skin. She would have stood out like a fly in the soup.
Yeah, so, I have to say, to say, it's a pity that we do not have the video, because I saw the picture of your grandmother, and she was one beautiful young woman, emancipated, educated, so it had to be really hard for her to accept this conflict with the officer that you just mentioned. And it's definitely, she was a character. But please, continue.
Yes, sorry. Yes, I know. But I think, yes, we have to remember these were very interesting times. And she probably didn't have the fear that other people had learned to have, because she was newly arrived and she hadn't gone through everything. So she was not as prudent as she could have been. Well, what happened is when someone called her name, she heard someone speaking in English loudly, "Lilia, what are you doing here? How did you get here?" And she looks up and there is one of her university friends from Pennsylvania in uniform. And he's working for the consulate. He's one of the many Americans that somehow ended up there. And she couldn't believe it, but then he couldn't believe it either. And she explained to him what had happened. And he said, "Well, your sister-in-law is right. You shouldn't stay much longer. You can leave. So let's do that. Go home. Pick up what you can carry and come back." And he actually sent, I think, a couple of young men with her. So she had time to collect documents, money, a change of clothes, and she left with them. And that night they put her in a military train that was going towards Berlin. And she never went back to Prague. And a couple of months later, she arrived in Manhattan, and my mother was born there. Yes.
What a story. What an incredible story.
Yes. Yes. But if it wasn't for you giving me a hand with all this, we wouldn't have known what happened to my grandfather then. That was the beginning of the journey. Yes.
Definitely. It was really my pleasure to help you. And I was really excited when we asked the military archives to get some documents of your grandfather. And do I remember correctly, was there also the picture included of him, or it was just a description?
There was a description. There was a picture somewhere else. I think there was in a visa application.
I see.
Yes.
But I remember until today how they described him as a very good friend, a loyal guy, just all the compliments they could give, they gave to him.
There were some nice, some comments of his commander saying that, yeah, he was intelligent and blah. But then there was a point where he actually took a leave and he took off, and then he ended up in jail for a few days for going all the way to the Czech Republic without permission. Let me see if I can find it. Yes. October 10, 1945, released to Newcastle. He left to CSR. That could be Czechoslovak Republic.
Exactly. No, no doubt.
He went to check his family. And came back on 8 October. Yeah, but he got a punishment. He was in solitary. Nothing else was given, but because he had a good record. So that was, yes. Let me see if I can find that description. It's very glowing. Where he's, yeah, they say he's the perfect, the perfect corporal, I think.
Yeah, he spoke languages. He was a lawyer. All kind of just superlatives they use. So he was definitely a good man, and it's good to read. I think something about a person you have never met that it was really a good guy.
Yes, yes, and yes, that makes things good. To yes.
But then his trace is disappearing, right? Have you ever found out what happened to him or where he died? Because there were also like several questions about it. Did you ever find it
yes,
out?
Yes, I did. That was after, actually, even after we met. I ended up having that trip to Slovakia where we met with you and your lovely family. And after that, I took a train to Berlin to meet with a cousin who had a little shoebox with a few mementos, including my grandfather's wedding band. So his wedding band with my grandmother's name engraved and the date of their marriage, which I have with me now, and a few other pictures. So we completed the story. We still don't know what the roads were, what the plan was, but obviously he was leaving, and he left in a hurry after the disappearance of my uncle Josef Och. So he took a visa to Brazil. He actually left from Prague to Stockholm, and then he sailed from Stockholm all the way to Brazil that very year, 1946. I don't know if they ever saw each other again. Evsen went to Stockholm, and we have the ship manifest and his entry. The immigration records in Rio de Janeiro were very, very nice. That was much easier for me because I speak Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So I could write to them, and then they sent me a copy of his immigration application. He apparently got a job as some sort of manager or foreman for Skoda in Rio.
Really? Wow.
And he was, yes, Rio de Janeiro. And that's where he died very young, in 1948. We don't know if they were in touch. We know that Lilia, my grandmother, was trying to make it back to South America, but she had a big case of pregnancy. And my mother was born in October 1946, very shortly after she arrived in New York. We all assume that she was following his steps and just needed to have a baby, so couldn't continue. So my grandmother stayed in New York, where my mother was born, and she stayed on for about 4 years. There was one anecdote. She had, in 48, she had breakdown, she had health problems, she felt really poorly, she had to be hospitalized. That was, she was all alone with the baby, and she actually got employment in some architectural firm in New York City, and she was there living as a single mom. And so we don't know what the plan was, but my grandfather had bad infection, and he passed away very suddenly in 1948 in Rio.
Yeah. Well, I think it had to be a very strong moment for you, and I have a goosebumps when you were speaking that you found in his possession the ring, you know, with the name of his wife. I think that in spite of the circumstances, they were always kind of connected, and it had to be something amazing for you to have this ring.
Yes, yes, it is. And that was, again, my cousin Vendulka, when we got in touch, she said, well, I have a few things, but I'm not mailing them to you. You have to come in person. I need to give them to you in your hand. And these were things that were sent after his passing. They were sent to his family in Prague. Then my great-grandmother, Aranka, and kept them. She kept a whole lot of stuff in in her possession, even some clothes, personal effects. But those, as the time went, they got used. My mother's cousins, as they grew up, they actually wore the formal clothing that my grandfather had to school balls, and when they had some formal function, they would dig into the closet and use Uncle Yeno's jacket, and they still remember the jacket and the shoes that they used to wear. And it was so it's cute, it's heartwarming, and yes, and so they kept things. And there was this little box that when my great grandmother passed away, she just gave it to her daughter and said, "You hold on to this, somebody will come."
That's a real treasure. Yeah. It's really amazing story, but I would like to ask one more question. A couple of years ago, after we did some research, you decided to make a trip and show Slovakia also to your children and to your family. How did you feel about it? Because your grandparents were really living in a hurry, in the bad times.
Well, it's whatever is happening inside you when you're traveling with two very loud young children. Things get diffused because you have to be running in between, you know, ice cream and funny things. But it was very, very emotional for me. It was a very strong journey. It was too short. It was very short. It just also feeling, especially the train ride from Prague to meet you at one of the stations. Thinking I'm making the trip in reverse, you know, people kept going west and then I'm coming this way to see where we come from, and from the forests and the I remember just looking out of the train, all those castles up in the hills, and here and there you would see this ruin and say, well, I should get off here and go and see what that is about. And so the very first thing was we had such little time, and the second it was a bit like homecoming, going to the same village. To you actually took us to the corner where my family's shop used to be, and still there. And the same building, that's where 2-3 generations of my family were born and lived. It's a small town and didn't grow that much, so it's pretty much the same way that it used to be for decades, I suppose. When I came back and I spoke to some of the relatives, they were saying, oh yes, it looks the same. And you know, I have a picture of that window, and that used to be such and such a person's bedroom. And it's very powerful. It's also it's very soothing. In the middle of all these, there was a promise I gave my grandmother that I would find my mom's relatives, my relatives. They said, it's so you achieved your goal. You are fulfilling a promise that you made when you were little. And yes, and it's just the beginning of a journey. From there, we're still in touch with all these slew of cousins and relatives. From there, I didn't get the chance to do a lot of traveling, but I did go to Israel to see some of the family that live there. And a cousin of my grandfather was still very much alive, a very colorful, larger-than-life professor, already retired. His name is Andy, or Yeshayahu, that's his Hebrew name, Yeshayahu Jelinek. He wrote several books on the history of Slovakia in particular, which brings another interesting side story. At the time, you and I were finally getting in answers on where to find our family, I had been trying to track him down to buy one of his books. I didn't know we were related. So remember, I asked you to translate a letter for me to a person, Juraj Jelinek.
I still have the book from him, you know, or from Andrei Jelinek.
Yes. How funny that, yes. So you had helped me send a letter in Slovak, I think, to somebody called Juraj Jelinek, that Mrs. Kabinova, the neighbor who remembered my family, said, well, if someone knows where everybody is, it should be him. And I didn't hear he was dead, so you should try contacting him. So we wrote to him, and he didn't answer himself. I just received an email from Yeshayahu Jelinek. And when I received it, I was thinking, oh, the author of the book, good. I'm going to, you know, I can order his book. And then instead of saying, oh, how, you know, when, where do I send you, or this is how you pay for the book, the email said, my cousin Juraj says, you're asking questions about the family. Who are you? And and then I said, well, this is my story. And he said, well, I am your uncle.
Wow.
Your birth uncle.
World yeah. is small.
The world is very small. And it ended up that I was related to half the people I was asking questions to. And we did correspond for a decade with Yeshayahu. And before he passed away, I was lucky enough to be able to see him and his daughters. He has a couple of beautiful grandchildren now, and I think they published one more book of his, posthumous. I don't read Hebrew, but so he's been, yeah, he was always very busy.
Well, it looks like that there is still a lot of stories that can be said and a lot of histories that can be explored. I'm really happy, Maya, that you found the time and that we had a chance to meet and to speak, at least, you know, in this online space. And I hope you will have a lot of opportunities to explore your roots, and also that your family will continue and will have many interesting and happy endings. Thank you very much again for coming and for accepting the invitation, and all the best to you.
Same to you. Take care.
That was all for today, and I am looking forward to you next week. You were listening to Slovak Ancestry podcast with Michal Rázus, created with the support of Podcast Industry. You can find us at Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. If you have an interesting family story and you would like to share it, feel free to contact me via email in the description.